Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. We just left off in the last episode with probably one of the most powerful statements by Madison that, as far as I'm concerned, it completely negates this concept of nullification. He goes right into the very heart of the matter. And bottom line, we're gonna go through it again, just because for those of you who did not listen to the last episode, we want to, because it was the very last part. And so some of you, we recognize that some of you only can catch the front part of this show. Some of you catch the bottom back part. A lot of people are busy. They can't get the podcast. So we're gonna read through this again. But this is where Madison actually states or asserts that the states are the judge and jury when it comes to encroachments over the Constitution by the federal government, not the Supreme Court. And this goes right in line into the heart of what I've been telling people. The court system has no jurisdiction. So I get into these conversations. Well, you know, you got to get precedence by the Supreme. No, you don't. That's the last thing you want to do. Because when you step into a court that has zero jurisdiction over the issue that you are trying to resolve, then you've just given them the license to usurp everything over you. Now, even though they may, you know, we may have created a terrible, unconstitutional precedents by going to the Supreme Court, we got to stop doing this. And so with Republic Review, this will stop because we will be very clear on what the federal court system has jurisdiction over. If it ain't enumerated, they have no jurisdiction over it. Whether it be life, whether it be, oh, well, let's say, you know, marriage, let's say housing, all of these types of things. The federal court system has no business meddling with it, according to all of the framers in the ratification debate. So, moving forward, as you know, the show is also sponsored by ReclaimTheRepublic.org as well as RepublicReview.org. And this really is the only show that is going to give you the academic evidence that it's irrefutable. I mean, how can you refute the authority and the power that the states possess in being able to go after the federal government and holding them accountable for violating the state's constitution? So here's the question, and I ask this on a regular basis, and it's been a little while, but are you a part of the problem or are you a part of the solution? Now, if you want to be a part of the solution, then you need to be like that Dutch boy and willing to get up on that dike and actually, you know, put your finger in the hole, one of the many holes that are there. We need everybody getting up there and putting their fingers in the hole just to kind of stop this so that we can actually displace the water behind that dike that doesn't belong there. Then we can get rid of the dike and we can allow our liberties to flow liberally throughout this republic. But for some reason, we fell asleep and we allowed the federal government to start damming up and creating these blocks and regulations and so forth, and taking away our liberties. So this is why we need people. And this is why I constantly tell people, you know, we need your help. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we do need your help. And so we hope that you recognize, one, the facts, and we hope that you recognize the importance of this. I was working a little bit more on the Section 3 14th Amendment article, and it's actually grown quite a bit just due to the fact that there's so much of the 14th Amendment that people don't understand. And if you are a regular and you've heard me talk about the 14th Amendment, then you know that the 14th Amendment is far more important and far more critical, and it dismantles more and more of, as we start understanding what the liberals are doing and how they're behaving and all this unconstitutional government, you'll start recognizing, wow, this is a godsend. The insights that were put into this thing to actually, I mean, some of these things may have been kind of pertinent at the time, but for the most part, we've completely forgotten about the apportionment. We've completely forgotten about the debts. We've completely forgotten about the individual privileges and immunities, and more importantly, holding our public servants accountable. And so we will disclose the 14th, at least I'll get into it, even though my focus is Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, we will get into that. Now, after these resolutions, we're going to be getting into the vetoes, which is going to be Madison's veto. We're going to get into Jackson's veto. But before we get into Jackson's veto, we're going to get into Monroe's veto. And then by doing this, I'm hoping that you can discern, you can actually start differentiating the difference between the three presidents. In a way, I love Madison's, you know, he's so clear and concise, and he puts so much into that one page. But I do like the simplicity of Monroe. I think Monroe stated it best. I mean, you don't need a decoder ring, or you don't need to have a good, profound understanding in context to the vernacular that Madison, what he uses in that veto language, makes it a little difficult for people to understand. Even though it's really clear, he does point to these, you know, what I call the mystical clauses, or these general clauses that are in the Constitution that grant no general powers. So anyways, we're going to get into the vetoes, then we're going to get into Madison's letter, then we're going to dive into Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. We are going to take interruptions with state legislatures when I finally have the time to try to get one, because I don't have a producer to actually go out, because there's lots of them that chomping at the bit, and I've been told, yeah, let me know, and I just haven't had the time to get back to them. We've got some legislators in Idaho. We have legislators in Montana. We have legislators in Wyoming, South Dakota. We've actually had Tony Randall on here, and he was awesome, right? I mean, everybody loved that interview. That even though it was two full shows, he gave us a lot of time. He was awesome. We need to get people like him to become the champions of restoring our constitutional republic. You know, he fits the bill. Tony Randall fits the bill of being a Thomas Jefferson of today, or a Patrick Henry. Anyway, I know that there are lots of little things that everybody is just consumed with. All of these things going on, as we start recognizing that the floor is crumbling from underneath us, you can either focus on getting off the floor, or you can be fixated on looking at that floor as it's decaying here and decaying there, and failing to respond to either reinforce the floor or get out of the room altogether and get into the proper room and space. Because bottom line, if you're distracted, then you are not engaging in the solution, which means that you're just going to be a part of the problem. We're going to have to save your sorry butt. We shouldn't have to do this. I mean, I truly believe that this is a government of self-governance, that we all need to be involved in this. And anybody that is sitting and relying on the laurels of good people to save them, you know what? You may get what you deserve. You may get what you deserve. And those of us who are willing to die for doing the right thing and saving liberty for our posterity, well, if we're gone, then what are you going to do? What is it going to take to get you involved? Okay, so with that, I just got a couple minutes. So what I want to do is we're going to go ahead, like I said, and take off the last two paragraphs. Where we left off, I want to kind of start over again. And so this is really important. This is probably one of the most powerful statements that Madison provided us in understanding the state's roles whenever the federal government violates the Constitution. He says, it appears to your committee to be a plain principle founded in common sense, illustrated by common practice, and essential to the nature of compacts. So he's basically stating that, you know, it should just be the obvious thing at the end of your nose. Here we are, we're talking about a compact. We're talking about the parties of a compact. And this particular compact that we're talking about is the Constitution. And the parties are the states. Clear. That's it. The parties are the states. The president is not a party to the Constitution. Congress is not a party to the Constitution. Nor is the Supreme Court a party to the Constitution. They all three have defined roles, responsibilities, and powers that we, the states, have delegated to them. And so he goes on and says that where resort can be had to no tribunal superior to the authority of the parties. In other words, there's no last court. There is no other mechanism that you can appeal to. It comes down to you, the states, you, the people of these states. The parties themselves must be the rightful judges in the last resort where the bargain made has been pursued or violated. And with that, we will jump back into this because I want to reread that so that you really understand what Madison is saying, because I don't think he could have been clearer. We will be right back after these two promos. So please stay tuned and we'll be right back after this. Thank you so much. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue.
Okay, so as we kind of cut out there, I was covering whether the bargain made has been pursued or violated. What did he mean by that? So before that, he said that where resort can be had to no tribunal superior to the authority of the parties. In other words, when you don't have any court system that has the jurisdiction, then it comes down to this. The parties themselves must be the rightful judges. Moving on, he says, in the last resort, whether the bargain made has been pursued or violated. So what does he mean by the bargain? He means the agreement. When you've agreed that this is what's going to be happening, and whether it has been pursued, whether you've been moving down this path and it's being done, or whether it's being violated, it comes down to this, that the parties have the ultimate determination on whether it's truly being pursued or whether it's being violated. The Constitution of the United States was formed by the sanction of the states, given by each in its sovereign capacity. It adds the stability and dignity, as well as to the authority of the Constitution, that it rests on legitimate and solid foundation. The states then begin, or no, the, forgive me, not begin. The states then being the parties to the constitutional compact and in their sovereign capacity, it follows of necessity that there can be no tribunal above their authority to decide in the last resort whether the compact made by them be violated, and consequently that as the parties to it, they must themselves decide in the last resort each questions as may be sufficient magnitude to require their interposition. Now, does that sound like nullification? Does it at all in any way come to sound like, oh, well, we're just negating the law. We're not going to enforce the law. No, this is very... there's cognitive processes here where the states actually have to work together and make the determination of how they're going to work together in interposing and forcing compliance. So I'm just trying to be very, very clear here, friends. You have to understand that what Madison is saying is that the states not only have this power and authority, they have the responsibility in addressing these issues specifically, that they have to work together, that there is no other power, there is no other tribunal that you can go to. So anybody that wants to say, oh, well, the Supreme Court, you got to take this to the, this is where we take to the Supreme Court. No. It's almost like, let me come up with a good explanation of this. It's almost like us having a military offense and or a capability, like ICBMs or something. And, we have, all these enemies around the world. And so for our security positioning, what we're going to do is we're going to turn our ICBMs over to our enemy so that they will fire these weapons upon themselves. Nod, nudge, wink. You get it? You understand what I'm saying here? Because you cannot look at the federal government, who has an insatiable desire to grow its power and control over the states and the people. Insatiable desire. You cannot consider them anything other than an enemy. I'm sorry. They're supposed to be doing very specific things. And when they start actually saying, yeah, we'll take care of this for you, when they have no constitutional standing to be even involved in it, that's what happens. That's how Eisenhower gave us the Hugh Department, the Health, Education, and Welfare Department. That's how Lincoln, I believe it was the one that gave us the Department of Agriculture. Folks, let's stop surrendering to this thing that is only designed to do the few things we've delegated to it. Stop surrendering. What we are doing is tantamount to giving up our liberty. Now, I was in a conversation and we were talking about healthcare, and we were talking about pharmaceutical companies, and we were talking about how, you know, pharmaceutical companies are now trying to force everybody into a mail, you know, a mail delivery system so that they don't have to pay for a brick and mortar. They're just going to ship these drugs straight to you. Interesting. Now, if you are stubborn like myself, then what you'll do is you'll have your doctor write you the script and say, you know what, this is $15 for me to take for every 3 months. I'll pay $15 out of pocket just so that you can't, you know, mail these things so that they can be stolen or you screw it up, because I manage, and most people are very good at managing their needs. But when you're dependent on the pharmaceutical company and these insurance companies to send you stuff, because I can tell you this happened to my mom. Things fell into a crack. She didn't get her renewal or her new subscription, or I should say prescription, for some medication. She actually, and her mobility was, this is in the last days of her life. Her mobility was terrible. She actually had to, I had to take her to the doctor just to get the script done and just so she could have that script handed to her because she hadn't had any and her health was in peril. You know, when you call, and if you've ever called somebody and talked to them and they say, oh, well, that's okay, we'll take care of it. And if they don't, if they blow it and you die, does that person get charged with murder? No, they're indemnified. There's no consequences to their bad behavior. Now, more importantly, it came to me, and you start looking at this, what I am doing by no longer allowing the insurance company to provide these medications for me, I am removing myself from the market space for them to make money. Now, if you understand, the insurance company is not an insurance company anymore. The insurance company is the fascia for the federal government, because who controls insurance companies now? Because of Obamacare, because of the aggrandizing of the roles, responsibilities, and powers that the federal government has assumed and usurped from we the people, they're now in a position where, you know, they have this ability to state, hey, you know, you can't do this. And that's why they're forcing, I'm sure many of you who are listening, or at least your folks, your uncles, people in your life that maybe, you know, they're taking more prescriptions than, you know, the normal person because they're old or they're elderly or they're getting up there, is what we say. And so what do you do? I mean, I'll tell you, if you understand Wicker v. Filburn or Filburn v. Wicker, yeah, it's Wicker v. Filburn. Anyway, if you understand that case of 1943, where the farmer decided instead of buying wheat, it would be cheaper for him to grow it, because why did it get more expensive? Because government, the federal government, unconstitutionally started regulating it. They started putting a tax on wheat. And so, well, shoot, the cost just went up. I mean, I can't afford that. So this farmer who actually he didn't grow wheat to sell. He had livestock. He wanted to grow the wheat to feed his animals. And so that's what he did. He started growing wheat. And a federal regulator came onto his property and says, hey, I notice you've got livestock here, but I also notice you're growing wheat over there. And he goes, we're going to have to tax that. And the farmer says, well, I'm not selling that wheat. That's wheat's not for sale. And the farmer, the bureaucrat, this tax collector, said it doesn't matter. That wheat right there, by you growing that, you have removed yourself from the market space in buying wheat. Therefore, we're not obtaining the taxes from you in the consumption of that wheat. So we're going to have to tax it. And the federal government actually won that case. Because why? Because it went into a federal court over an issue the federal government has no power to assume. So they basically use their own court system to rule in favor of themselves to hold you accountable in taking you to the cleaners, or actually to literally steal your money. So what does this have to do with pharmaceuticals? And I forgive me for going down this path, but I want you to understand that if you are paying out of your pocket, the day will come when these insurance companies are saying, you are taking revenue that we are banking on, that you're paying for, that we're not getting. Believe it or not, even though you're paying for the pharmaceutical insurance and coverage, but by you paying out of pocket, they're not making the money in the transaction of buying the wholesale drugs and then giving them to you so that they could mark it up. Instead, you're buying it from Rite Aid. Instead, you're buying it from Walgreens or Walmart. And that's not cool, because as far as they're concerned, that money's supposed to be going in their pocket. They have exclusive right to your money and making money off of you on these very specific things. Mark my words, you will see these cases coming forth. Anyway, when we come back, we're going to get right back into what Madison was saying regarding the state's authorities with these resolutions.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.
To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
Okay, so Madison moves on in stating this. It does not follow, however, because the states, as sovereign parties to their... I shifted my head over and there was a break. So let me flow this from the beginning again. It does not follow, however, because the states, as sovereign parties to their constitutional compact, must ultimately decide whether it has been violated, that such a decision ought to be interposed either in a hasty manner or on doubtful and inferior occasions. Okay, so what he's basically saying is, just because the states can do this, it's not something that you want to make haste or just jump into and say, hey, we have exception to what you're doing, federal government, and we're going to hold you accountable. Well, in other words, and he's saying, and inferior occasions. So it's may like, okay, so a federal team, riding from the East Coast to the West Coast, drove through your state and they sped all the way. There's nothing in the Constitution that allows them to do that. They're not above the law, and they refuse to get pulled over. It's not something to actually say we want to break up the union over. Because really, when it comes down to it, why would the states actually start enforcing their contract? One, because they're very oppressive laws that have been enacted and that the states, or I should say the federal government, is putting upon the states. But two, I think the other part of this is that it's more than just the oppression that they're putting on. It's the cost that it's unbearable. If you look at the debt that we are taking, the magnitude of unconstitutional government, you know what? Madison says it's something that, we shouldn't be doing in a hasty manner. I'm telling you, folks, we better be far more hasty than we are right now, because we're at that point where they're going to pull the plunger and say, well, we're going to have to do this. And as I said before, the debt that China is buying, the debt that these foreign nations are buying in America to hold us down, are illegal debts. Now, how are these illegal debts? Well, if you only have, let's say you're an agent for the company, for the government, or what have you, and you have a checkbook, and everybody would presume you can write a check for anything, but oh no, you have a contractual requirement that you can only spend money on this, 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 or this. That doesn't give you, just because you have a checkbook, doesn't mean you can start spending money on that, this thing, and that thing. If you understand, all of the money that the federal government has been spending on, all these different things, those debts, those things, as far as we're all concerned, are illegal. It's done in fraud. You would go to jail if you were working at a company and you wrote checks that you did not have the authority to write for things that you couldn't do, especially like buying yourself a car. Oh, I got the company's checkbook. I'm going to buy myself a car. You go down and get yourself a car. That is fraud, especially when you are constrained to only spend money for very specific things. When you've been given budget, in the Marine Corps and in my civilian job, I had budget. I could buy computers, I could buy these things, but I couldn't buy these things for myself. That would be corruption. That would be fraud. That would be illegal. And that's what Madison is saying. Madison is basically saying that, you don't want to do things in a hasty manner or over something that's inferior. But I'm here telling you, and I just, as I've said this before, we are not accountable to that debt. But the only point when we get to that precipice, when we get to that, actually the apex of this issue, is when the states can actually and definitively say they do not owe any of that money that was placed fraudulently, or this debt that was assumed fraudulently by a government in fraud. Now, China has to know. There's no doubt in my mind, China and the rest of the world, all of these people know that this is fraudulent money that they're giving us to allow us to go further down this trail, to go deeper and deeper into debt. They have to know that there is no constitutional standing that if they actually come and say, hey, because we foreclosed or anything else, they have no standing in doing this, especially if the states wake up and say, you've never had the authority to do this. All that debt is fraud. Now, wouldn't that be great to, bring in Bush, Trump, all of these people that are spending recklessly? Yeah, I said Trump. Obama, Clintons, every single one of them that frauded the people and took on debt to spend money that they had no business spending and no constitutional standing or power. and all of the congressmen that allowed it to happen, that actually signed bills to spending that money, to open up the public purse, to say, we're going to take this debt on. Wouldn't that be great? I mean, just to hang them or at least incarcerate them, or maybe better yet, give them to China. Let China or the countries that we owe debt to, you know, here's your share of public servants, here's your share, and we're done with it. Anyway, back to what Madison was saying. Even in the case of ordinary conventions between different nations, where, by the strict rule of interpretation, a breach of a part may be deemed as a breach of the whole, every part being deemed a condition of every other part and of the whole. It is always laid down that the breach must be both willful and material to justify an application of the rule. And the application of the rule is secession, dividing yourself, stepping away from the contract and saying, we're done. You have violated this. You have willfully, materially violated this, and we have just cause to leave. Now, that goes back to the Civil War and the secession declarations by these states. Go read those things. They had cause. They had cause to secede. The North was actually waging economic warfare. They weren't supposed to do that. And by their seceding, they gave the North the opportunity to then exploit that. Now, what should have happened, and I don't want to say I'm a fan of slavery in the South at all, but when it comes down to the contract, they were violating the contract. Now, because the South left, and because the South was violating the fundamental premise of our Declaration of Independence, that all men were created equal, and that all life deserves, the pursuit of happiness, justice, and so forth. And the point is that we now had the opportunity, this window of opportunity came along, and instead of actually eradicating slavery, well, Lincoln said, I don't want to be the failure of watching the states split apart and, this nation falling. So Lincoln decided, well, I'm going to wage war. We're going to take it to them. We're going to say, you can't secede. We're not going to let you. Well, I'm bringing this up because clearly Madison's saying right here that they can. At any point in time when you have a breach that is both willful and material, that will justify the severing of the contract, you jump on it. Now, what Lincoln should have done was he should have jumped on this concept of ending slavery in North America. We already had the Monroe Doctrine to say, hey, this is our hemisphere, and we're going to have some say on what kind of, quality of life and who can mingle in here and meddle. And, these southern states, they just left. They're slave states. We are going to shut down their slavery because we believe all people in this Western Hemisphere, the northern continent, the North American continent, that we will make sure that all life has, an opportunity of liberty. And in doing that, that would have completely changed the tone of the Civil War. And instead of it being a civil war, it would have been a war against slavery instead of a war for control by definition of that the Civil War or a civil war is. Madison moves on and says this, but in the case of an intimate and constitutional union like the United States, it is evident that the interposition of the parties in their sovereign capacity can be called for by occasions only deeply and essentially affecting the vital principles of their political system. That's what's going on right now, my friends. We have implemented not a constitutional law, the rule of law. We have implemented, or they have been implementing, socialism and communism. Madison goes further and says, the resolution has accordingly guarded against any misapprehension And so when we come back, I don't want to leave further. That's why I kind of stopped myself. We will, when we get back, we'll get right back into this, and we'll start off right there regarding this resolution has accordingly guarded against, and we will be right back after this promo. Thank you so much.
Folks, Red State Talk Radio has brought back its monthly newsletter. I know everyone gets a lot of emails, but this is not a daily or weekly newsletter. It's a monthly newsletter. So you will not be overwhelmed with a plethora of emails from Red State Talk Radio. Come on, it's only once a month. I'll be contributing a constitutional perspective to one of the current issues to help everyone see an alternative perspective, or what I believe would be a framer's perspective regarding the issue to help us maintain a constitutional paradigm. I will also provide information regarding a significant historical context to the time of year so that we can remember our history, so we will not be doomed to repeat the inevitable failings from forgetting our past and origins. Just go to Red State Talk Radio and sign up for the newsletter. This way you can get a focused view of what is going on in the Republic as well as what is going on at Red State Talk Radio. Thank you.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
Okay, so I need to do a little less editorializing, so I will do my best here. The resolution has accordingly guarded against any misapprehension of its object by expressly requiring for such an interposition, quote, the case of deliberate, palpable, and dangerous breach of the Constitution by the exercise of powers not granted by it, close quote. It must be a case of a light and transient nature, but of a nature dangerous to the great purposes for which the Constitution was established. It must be a case, moreover, not secure or doubtful in its construction, but plain and palpable. Lastly, it must be a case not resulting from a partial consideration or hasty determination, but a case stamped with a final consideration and deliberate adherence. It is not necessary because the resolution does not require that the question should be discussed how far the exercise of any power ungranted by the Constitution would justify the interpositions of the party to it, as cases might easily be stated, which none would contend ought to fall within the description. Cases, on the other hand, might with equal case be stated so flagrant and so fatal as to unite every opinion in placing them within the description. But the resolution has done more than guard against misconstruction by expressly referring to cases of a deliberate, palpable, and dangerous nature. It specifies the object of the interposition, which it contemplates to be solely that of arresting the progress of evil, of usurpation, and of maintaining the authorities, rights, and liberties appertaining to the states as parties to the Constitution. From this view, the resolution would seem inconvincible that it can incur any just disapprobation from those who, laying aside all momentary impressions and recollecting the genuine source and object of the federal Constitution, shall candidly and accurately interpret the meaning of the General Assembly. If the deliberate exercise of dangerous powers palpably withheld by the Constitution could not justify the parties to it interposing even so far as to arrest the progress of the evil and thereby to preserve the Constitution itself, as well as to provide for the safety of the parties to it, there would be an end to all relief from usurped power and direct subversion of the rights specified or recognized under the state constitutions, as well as a plain denial of the fundamental principle on which our dependence itself was declared. But it is objected that the judicial authority is to be regarded as the sole expositor of the Constitution in the last resort. And it may be asked for what reason the declaration by the General Government Assembly, supposing it to be theoretically true, could be required to at the present day and in so solemn manner. On this objection, it might be observed that there may be instances of usurped power, which the forms of the Constitution would never draw within the control of the judicial department. Secondly, that if the decision of the judiciary be raised above the authority of the sovereign parties to the Constitution, the decision of other departments not carried by the forms of the Constitution before the judiciary must be equally authoritative and final with the decisions of that department. But the proper answer to the objection is that the resolution of the General Assemblies to those great and extraordinary cases in which all the forms of the Constitution may prove ineffectual against infractions dangerous to the essential rights of the parties to it, the resolution supposes that dangerous powers not delegated may not only be usurped and executed by the other departments, but that the judicial department also may exercise or sanction dangerous powers beyond the grant of the Constitution, and consequently that the ultimate right of the parties to the Constitution to judge whether the compact has been dangerously violated must extend to violations by one delegated authority as to by another, by the judiciary as well as the executive or the legislature. And so he moves on and says that however true, therefore, it may be that the judicial department is in all questions submitted to it by the forms of the Constitution to decide in the last resort, this resort must necessarily be deemed the last in relation to the authorities of the other departments of the government, not in relation to the rights of the parties to the constitutional compact from which the judicial as well as other departments hold their delegated trusts. On any other hypothesis, the delegation of judicial power would annul the authority annul the authority delegating it, and the concurrence of this department with the others in usurped powers might subvert forever and beyond the possible reach of any rightful remedy the very Constitution which all are instituted to preserve. The truth declared in the resolution being established, the expediency of making the declaration at the present day may safely be to the temperate consideration and candid judgment of the American public. It would be remembered that a frequent recurrence to fundamental principles is solemnly enjoined by most of the state constitutions, and particular by our own, as a necessary safeguard against the danger of degeneracy to which republics are liable, as well as other governments, though in a less degree than others, and a fair comparison of the political doctrines not unfrequent at the present day with those which characterize the epoch. Now, you understand epoch, right? The beginning, a beginning point. The epoch of our revolution, and which formed the basis of our Republican constitutions, will best determine whether the declaratory recurrence here made those principles ought to be viewed as unseasonable and improper, or as a vigilant discharge of an important duty. The authority of the constitutions over the governments and the sovereignty of the people over constitutions are truths which are all at times necessary to be kept in mind, at no time perhaps more necessary than at the present. And so these observations appear to form a satisfactory reply to every, this is his conclusion, to every objection which was not founded on a misconception of the terms employed in the resolutions. There is one other, however, which may be of too much importance not to be added. It cannot be forgotten that among the arguments addressed to those who apprehended danger to liberty from the establishment of the general government over so great a country, the appeal was emphatically made to the immediate existence of the state governments between the people, and that the government, to the vigilance with which they would descry the first symptoms of usurpations, and the promptitude with which they would sound the alarm to the public. This argument was probably not without its effect, and if it was a proper one, then to recommend the establishment of a constitution, it must be a proper one now to assist in its interpretation. And so he's clearly pointing to the states, my friends. Madison, I think, you know, he just went up to the plate and connected that ball and drove it out of the park here. It's very clear, friends. It is very clear that the states, whenever they allow the federal government to make decisions over things that they have no authority, no delegated power within the Constitution to decide, that is when it becomes it all of a sudden comes at the expense of the states, because the states are guaranteed to lose these types of trials, these types of issues when it comes to going to court. And I'm telling you, the federal government has been consistent in ruling for itself, regardless. Even though it may seem that the court systems do get it right every once in a while, it is never enough to take back our constitutional republic. This is why we need Republic Review. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the republic, and we need your help. God bless. I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to, so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution.